It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here on the very last Van Wee Financial Hour ever in the eighth year. Because next Saturday, we get to start off year number nine.
Unbelievable.
It's just lucky for all of us, I guess, that I didn't age in that time. Only you did.
Mm-hmm.
So that really makes things so much easier from just a routine day-to-day standpoint. 9 years. Anyway. Thank you. A little applause for the old people, or from the old people, whatever. Anyway, for those of you who have been around all of those 8 years, and we know you're out there, thanks for always being there. And tell your friends, some of those friends that get told, if you're just joining us, found it by accident or were told or whatever, then stick around for the whole hour. I promise you, you'll have a little fun. Find some things that you probably didn't know. And if you actually have an opinion or a question or anything about money, then feel free to pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255, and you will go to the head of the class and we'll discuss whatever it is you would like to do. It's a good week to be doing this because things have really been turning in the market, and there's just no real way for us to sit here and tell you what's going to happen. But we can tell you that it's less miserable than it's been lately, and there are signs of life. Would you agree with all that?
Well, I'm going to sum it up by saying that so far in 2023, it resembles 2022 in almost no way that I can think
That's exactly right.
So it's the exact opposite.
And since we've been saying throughout the end of 2022 and early into this year, good riddance to 2022, to be construed as a good thing.
But the most obvious way is that stocks have been rising instead of plummeting, which I think we're all grateful for.
Yeah.
But there's some less obvious differences as well. Interest rates, specifically the 10-year yield, it hasn't been rising recently, but it's actually been staying very steady in the 3.5% range. There is some variation, but in January, it dropped from about 3.75 to start the year, and then it's just hovered at that 3.5 range. And last year, we were just seeing spike after spike after spike. The other reason is that the dollar has reversed its somewhat meteoric rise that we saw through the majority of 2022, and it started to come down to a more reasonable level. A strong dollar, weak dollar, you can make pros and cons about either one, but when all the movement is in one direction, specifically up, as was the case last year, it's not great for the stock market. So that's been a nice change of trend as well.
There are always winners and losers whenever things like that are sort of large and global change. Somebody will win, somebody will lose.
Yeah.
If you're has a lot of winners here.
If you're an international traveler, strong dollar is great. If you're trying to sell your goods overseas, maybe not as much.
So manufacturers have been taking it on the chin for exporting.
Yes, for sure. So it's not just that stocks are doing well this year. It's a complete reversal in that the worst performing asset classes in 2022 are the biggest winners in 2023.
And they're identical. They're not just close or general classes. Identically, the worst three and the best three.
Yeah, changed. It's crazy.
That's why it says it resembles 22. Not at all.
The NASDAQ, consumer discretionary, communication services, and technology are leading the way higher. And those were last year's biggest losers, as you mentioned. The NASDAQ is up 4.3% this week and is now up 11% this year. Technology gained 4.5% this week. It's now up over 10% this year. Consumer discretionary and communication services now up about 15% year to date. Energy, which was last year's biggest winner, is still up, but just 4.7% so far in 2023, a third of what the communication services sector is up. And utilities, the only other sector to show gains last year, is down 2% this year. So really a true reversal.
The most surprising thing to me, we have watched natural gas go from $9 plus to under $3.
Yeah, it's been
weird.
And it had a big drop this week again. I'll get to that in a second. The S&P and Dow didn't quite show the gains the NASDAQ had this week, but we're still up 2.5% and 1.8% respectively. And markets across the world continued to climb as well. There were just a few that gave back some gains. India, Israel, and the UK had slight losses. But almost every other one that I looked at this morning were up between 1 and 3%. Mexico added to an already great year, adding 2.3% to bring the year-to-date gains to over 17%. Mexico. I mean, who has heard positive news coming out of Mexico in the last year? I can't think of anything.
If you're not with one of the major drug cartels, I don't think anybody.
That's right. It's been nothing but bad news. So it's surprising. I don't know what's going on there, but it's interesting. Well, international continued its run. Commodities have been trending in the other direction. Oil and natural gas both showed losses for the week, and natural gas is now down 31% just in January. The commodities index dropped by 1.3% and is just barely positive for the year. Fixed income stayed very stable during the week, something we have not said in a long time. AGG, the ETF that has the aggregate bond market, it moved 0.0% during the week, showing just how
That's stable the market was.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen that either. From a technical and charting perspective, there's a whole lot to like right now. We're seeing almost every index break out of their downtrends, and we've seen a golden cross on the Dow, while one on the S&P looks pretty imminent. The Russell 2000 small cap index just had a golden cross this week, made a new higher high, which is also a good sign. So what could ruin all this good news? Well, the Fed meets this week. So Jerome Powell and his moron friends are meeting to decide the fate of our 401ks. And despite the fact that every company from Google to Goldman has announced layoffs, they could decide it isn't enough and that they really need to tank the economy in order to bring down inflation that's already coming down.
Now, the new inflation number says that the interest rate is still lower than the inflation rate, and he's got this bug in his butt that that's going to
look
be
at
reversed.
The trend. Look at the trend. I mean, hello.
Yeah.
So be careful this week. It's going to be a wild ride. Just buckle up.
Jobs coming out Wednesday and Friday also.
Yeah. I would not even dare to make a guess as to where next week will end up. But at least this week was good, and this year has been really good.
Yeah, and we did sell, unlike the three Fridays in the last 3 weeks, we did sell off a little bit into Friday's
close.
But it was still up.
Those other Fridays,
and nicely.
I think we were trending lower and then spiked at the end. So kind of the opposite.
Everybody's been reading the same things. We've been reading, thinking, oh, geez, all this stuff's going on next week. A little caution is urged.
Yep. Some more good news, though. Earnings season is now in full swing, and so far the numbers are well below historical averages, which is not good news, but the share price performance has been better than average. This means, to some degree, the market is celebrating bad news. In these crazy times, that doesn't really surprise anyone, though. The beat rate on earnings, it actually moved up, at both revenue and earnings, up to 61% and 58% on revenue. These numbers are both slight improvements, but they're still below that 70% average. And 4% of companies have raised guidance, while 7% have lowered, which is not great. There was one other bright spot, though, in the economic data. Came in generally better than expected. Of the 31 reports, 23 of them met or exceeded the guesses that economists made. And it's been a while since we saw a rate that high of beats or versus misses.
Yeah, I think all in all, it's kind of the term that everybody likes to banter about is kind of a Goldilocks situation where it's not too hot, not too cold. The GDP number came in at 2.9, which was higher than most of us expected, but it wasn't as much as the third quarter. And then for the year, that rounded it off at a 1.0%, including the recession of the first 6 months. But we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more of this. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
All right, the lines are open, 904-222-8255. Trivia question this week, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Let's talk about January, since it's here but almost gone. In the years when January closes down for the month, the usual rest of the year in the S&P 500 averages out to 2.1% gain. Hardly eye-opening. But this year, it would take an act of Congress to have January close anything but up this year because we only got two trading days left. So assuming that January closes up, what has been the long-term average performance for the S&P for the remainder of the year in percentage points? And it's below 50 and above zero. How's that for a real big...
Good range.
Yeah, thanks. All right, so what can we logically expect on average for the rest of the year, assuming Tuesday, the good January we're having still is sitting there and bringing us green numbers from all over the place. All right, little details wrapping up in the market?
I finished the market, but I did have a listener email in a question. Yeah. So friend of the show, Dave in Colorado, wanted to know that he heard last week we were talking about investing in internationally, and he mm-hmm. asked if there was any commentary on India versus other foreign markets and any recommendations for a good index type fund for India. And so I just wanted to answer that. I think that India could be a beneficiary of some of China's missteps lately. China's been a little bit too aggressive, a little bit too much on the side of Russia, a little bit too aggressive towards Taiwan, towards the United States. Their COVID policy was awful. They just got rid of it. Now they're suffering the consequences. They are going to be, quote unquote, reopening. So they are seeing a little bit of a bump in their market because of that. But the sentiment in the U.S. and towards China, I think, has shifted over the last 5 to 10 years pretty severely, whereas it used to be, yeah, they have some stuff we don't like about them, but they make great products. So what do we care? It's a lot cheaper and they have good quality. So now it's more like, do we really want to do business with China? And I think that you're going to see some other Asian countries benefit. India could be one of them. They have a ton of people. They have a ton of people to bring out of poverty. So all the sort of things that China went through in the last 50 years, India could go through in the next 50 years, potentially. I don't know that I'm not a big pick a country guy with it. But if you did want to do that, there's an ETF, and it is PIN, PIN, that is a pretty good index fund for their publicly traded companies. So that's the one that I would look at.
India's undergoing a long-term transformation, too. Back when I was a little younger than you are now, probably, India was building factories that were essentially 100 years old. They wanted manual labor because they had so many people that they needed to put to work. They actually built labor-intensive factories. Well, it kept some people working, but it didn't do much for their overall economy. Well, the new India is a much different place, and they're very aggressive also. China's aggressive, India's aggressive, but in a totally different manner. And India's being aggressive, trying to gather assets and gather work, only they're doing it now in the high-tech way, and the things they're building are much better. Much more modern.
That is true, and they're known for more for more skilled labor than factories now. So call centers where they have to speak decent English and they have to be able to troubleshoot and problem solve. So their education system is very good, especially on the technical side. But they still have a ton of people that live in poverty.
Yeah, and they're still doing a lot of assembly type work too. If you have a car, it has a dashboard. It was probably assembled in India. There is a huge likelihood. So they're very good at that sort of thing, too. And if this keeps going and they keep bringing the people out of poverty, it's a self-fulfilling thing because it keeps ramping up.
Yep. I think the potential for India is really strong.
On the other hand, if you look at it from the standpoint that we use, investing outside of the U.S. is riskier than inside the U.S., and it's hard to know enough. But we have certain ways to invest overseas that sort of take that risk and put it in the hands of people who are really good at it. In other words, we have one favorite mutual fund, and there are others. The fund we use normally, and we have a lot of it with our clients, has been absolutely stellar.
Yeah.
The guy who runs it is a guy who lives in Florida, and he's got a totally different outlook and totally different staff and approach to doing what they do. And Adam looked into it when we first got wind of it, mm-hmm. and it's very impressive.
Yeah, it's been a great fund, but I do prefer active management for international. Lately, I have been buying more all-world index funds just because the fundamentals for the recovery of the markets from COVID have been looking good, and international has been strong. So, but for long-term buy and hold, I prefer to buy active.
Yeah, so there's always a number of ways to skin the proverbial cat. But if you want to talk more about that, then just give us a call at the office or right here on the show, 904-222-8255. But thank you to the listener from Colorado who sent it in. You know that whenever we get an email like that, which just go to our website, VanWeFinancial.com, and click on the info at Van Wee Financial, and then email will go right to us, and we'll always get an answer back to you on the next show. How about that? All right, there's some other highlights that are not terribly important in the market. I just wanted to bring up one more thing. All of you Tesla naysayers, mm-hmm. neener, 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 61% this month. You know, you cross a guy like Elon Musk at your own risk, financially speaking. He may be a character, but man, he does some stuff so well.
He's drawn the ire of one side of the aisle for simply not going along with everything they say. And he's not this crazy right winger by any stretch, but that's the label that he's been given.
Lurking around Congress this week too, schmoozing on both sides, so you know he's got something up his sleeve.
Probably
has something to do with Twitter too. I wanted to bring up something. You know, everybody's always willing to shoot their mouth off and stick their neck out, and the market's going to do this or this. And you got the perpetual bears like Harry Dent. You got some other people who are always up. I pulled out some old paper the other day, Tuesday, July 16th, 2019. Not that long ago, right? Now, there is a guy by the name of Martin Armstrong. He's no one I follow, but this article picked him up for something that seemed a little ludicrous at the time. He was predicting Dow 35,000 by 2021. Now, when you're sitting there at levels where the 30,000 number has never been seen and it seems way far off, and it would have to be something like a 28% increase, and it's only a couple of years. Well, he did it. July 23rd, 2021, 35,000 close. Got up to January 4th of last year, 36.8, basically. So once in a while, somebody actually gets it right. That doesn't mean I'm going to start predicting, because that was really kind of an oddity out there, I thought. I will say, however, that if we collapse like some people are predicting right now, I'll be the most surprised person ever.
Yeah, I don't think it's – I think we saw the collapse last year. That was the market coming down because of the rising interest rates and mm-hmm. valuations getting overstretched on the high side.
Yep.
I don't see what the catalyst would be for it unless Powell continues to be
– he's the one guy that could do it.
Completely, you know, irrational when it comes to raising rates. So I think that he wants to keep his job, so I don't think he's going to do that.
His version of the CPI is called the PCE, personal consumption expenditures. It fell to 5% now. And where's he got interest rates? 4.5?
I think with this next raise, it would be 4.5 to 4.75.
Okay. And he, as I mentioned a little bit ago, he does want one to get higher than the other one. But if you leave one alone and the other one's falling, guess what's going to happen? So, and the PCE is falling. And one of the Fed officials did make mention of that this week. It was not big fanfare to it, but you know somebody's out there watching. So we're hoping he can do his quarter, and I don't think it'll hurt the market. If he did zero, it would help the market.
Yeah, well, the market's expecting at a 99% chance of a quarter point rate hike. So if he does that and the market is shocked by it, that wouldn't really make a lot of sense.
We also know that consumer sentiment is still bearish rather than bullish. We did that on the trivia last week. It was 42 consecutive weeks. It's now 43. It's still like that. And
crazy.
The broader measure is up to 55 weeks. So it's been over a year now that the sentiment has been bearish. Now, don't take that anyway, but positively, because generally they're wrong. But what do you expect when you wake up and on Monday morning, and the first three stories are banks could seize your accounts, the end of the dollar, government to close the biggest tax loophole. They're selling newspapers. Ignore them. We'll take a quick break and be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And let me repeat the trivia question before we go to the phones. In a year when January is negative, the usual performance, average performance of the market for the rest of the year is plus 2.1%. In a year where January is positive, as it's certainly looking to be this year, what is the performance for the rest of the year in the market? Good morning, David.
Let's see, is that as a trend or as a, I mean, there are no immutables, right? There's, so if January kicks off with a good sign. I don't know. I think it's still I had originally called because you were kind of talking about the end of the world.
That's what they say.
Yeah. And, you know, if you think about money and reputation, you know, if you've got a good reputation, that stands for a lot more than some lying SOB that just says this is worth that and tough. You know, so if you've got a good reputation, you can usually make a thing happen. And when you have a world of, like, scoundrels, like right now, you know, in politics today, there are people that are just coming up with the most emboldened lies, and they're just pretending that that's going to be the new reality.
Yeah.
Well, market forces doesn't support them. They usually turn out to be frauds.
Very true.
And so that may go on for months, but it doesn't necessarily go on for very long.
It's interesting you're bringing that up, because Adam and I were talking about that very thing in the break, and we've got a lot more to say about that today, believe me. You are so right, absolutely right, spot on.
Yeah, it's just a structure, though. Of, you know, do you remember when 1776 happened, that there was a book called Common Sense?
Yeah, Thomas Paine.
And it starts out talking about that if you've got, like, a village, you've got more of a society where there are not a lot of big structural things that need to happen. No stop sign, you know, stoplight.
Uh-oh. What happened? Oh, there he is. Okay. Sorry, we lost you for a second, but you're back.
Oh, sure.
Okay,
well,
thanks.
Well, he was talking about the...
Oh, no, lost him again. I don't know. We'll have to come back to you, David. It looks like the call might have dropped, so...
Yeah.
Why don't we grab...
And I still want to give you a shout at the trivia, too.
Yeah, why don't you grab the other call?
I'm not sure who it is.
But... That's okay.
Hello, caller. We do not have a name yet. Can you identify yourself?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, am I on the air?
Oh, there you go. Yes,
you
gotcha.
Are.
Who is this person?
Oh, okay. This is Ron from St. Mary's, Georgia.
Oh, sure. Good to hear from you. What's up?
Good to hear you guys. You guys got a great show again today, as always.
Well, thanks so much.
Ron.
I was wondering if you could give me a brief summary of or an explanation of what preferred stocks are. I should know this. I majored in finance, but that was back in during the Nixon administration.
Well, I'll tell you, Ron, no one really knows, so that's...
I prefer stocks to bonds. How's that? Yeah, it's very simple. In the pecking order...
It's easier to explain how radar works, probably.
True. In the pecking order of the financial structure of any company, if they get into financial trouble and start liquidating, stocks are below bonds. Bond is debt, and the debts will be paid first. So if there's money left over after paying off all the bondholders, then they start doling out money to the equity holders, stockholders. But there are various classes of stocks, too. And the preferred stock all the preferred stockholders get their money before the first regular common shares get theirs. The general rule of the preferred stocks is that they pay a coupon rate for dividends. Therefore, they act more like a bond, and their prices are pretty steady. Now, they don't have to pay the dividend on all of them. Some are required to be paid no matter what. Some are not. But in general, you can't pay a dividend to a common shareholder unless all of the preferred shareholders have had their dividends paid. So that's the fundamental difference, and that's why people who are essentially income investors are very often fond of the preferred stocks, as they know they're going to get their dividends. And then, of course, if you want to get technical, and I don't, but I'll bring it up, there are some types that are convertible from bonds to stocks and back, depending on the relative value in the market of each one. But generally speaking, it's an income item that's a little riskier than a bond and a little less risky than a common stock.
But has characteristics of
yes.
both.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Does that help?
Yes, it does. Now, when you say they're trying to raise money, are these companies that are in financial distress?
No. When a company's building up, it has a capital structure. It goes out to the capital markets. Say they're going to build a billion-dollar factory, and they don't have $1 billion. So they have to decide, should I issue debt or should I issue stock?
Equity.
Yeah, equities. Because debt carries interest rates. If you think back a few years when the Apple campus, got a name, big maze of a place. When they were going out to finance that, interest rates were so low that they issued $1 trillion in debt at 1%, and it oversold.
Yeah, it's like immediately.
At 1%, it oversold right out of the chute. Yeah, so they had the option of issuing stock, but it was so much cheaper in the long run. First off, dividends are not deductible to the corporation, and the interest payments are, and they were very profitable, so the deduction was good. So it's called the capital structure of the company, and one of the finance department essentially is responsible for determining what your cost of capital is and whether to retire anything or add on.
And what makes the most sense to do for new issuances.
And for instance, things like stock buybacks are very good for the shareholders normally. Well, Congress in its infinite wisdom just put a 1% tax on that so they can stick it to all the rest of us, as they so love to do. Fun, huh? But that's the whole purpose of the thing.
Okay, and then I'm assuming you just mentioned Apple, that their coupon rate would be very low as opposed to a company like Bed Bath & Beyond or something.
Very low.
Yeah, and that's going to be determined by a combination of the market and the rating agencies that issue grades on debt. So you'll see like AAA rated or BBB rated or junk.
Or BB&B, which is below everything now, as of today.
So that will determine not only what the market, it'll determine the coupon rate on the bond and then also what it trades at. So if it's at a discount or at a premium.
There are some very good preferred stock funds that have long-term track records of paying consistent dividends. For a lot of people, income-type investors, they've been good.
I usually allocate a small percentage to preferreds in most larger portfolios.
Yeah, I like them. So that satisfy your question?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Did you want to take a shot at the trivia?
Actually, I just won 2 weeks ago, so I feel kind of funny even venturing a guess. So.
Well, David's back on the line, and he didn't get a chance to guess. So we'll let him guess first then.
Okay.
Okay, that sounds good.
Thanks, Ron.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate the call.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Welcome back, David.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I am so hesitant to doom and gloom that projection. Hey, just quick to wrap up, Thomas Paine starts off that book, Common Sense, by saying that there's a society and that there's a government. And society is always better because people are in common agreement. You know, they agree that stoplights should be red, green, yellow. You know, that
you know, they're passing on the right on a roadway, things like that, just common agreement. And the idea that in the bad economy, I hear the music.
No, you got a minute. You can finish
it. Well, in he talks about the structure of government where you have big projects like dams and things like that that have to have bureaucrats running them.
Yep, so big only a government can do it.
Yeah, and so there's structure, and so performance. I wish, you know, Ralph Nader would be hired to do consulting about appointments in American government, because he could pick so many honest people. It'd be amazing.
Yeah, I think he's a little past his prime.
Well, he's probably got a good Rolodex.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, you're exactly right. In fact, right after the break here coming right up, I'm going to talk about your subject with a bit of a slant towards some things that have been going on lately. All right, I only got 5 seconds. Thanks for the call. We'll take a quick break and be right back. This is the Banwe Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banwe Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banwe.
And I'm Adam Banwe.
Quick apology to David. I cut him off because of the time without giving him a shot at the trivia. So, David, if you want to call back and try it, that's fine. It's some positive number that if January closes like it is now, then the average performance for the rest of the year in the market. And it's not an unpleasant thing to know. So we have been talking on and off for a while lately about books. You know, got into it with The Creature of Jekyll Island, which we still very highly recommend. It's about the starting and the process of the Fed. And I've talked about Atlas Shrugged, which is a very long read, so I'm not going to bring it up again for a while, but I'll remind you, if you have never read it, it's really good, and you should if you want to be able to talk about it. But the one for today, it's in my sights, and this goes right back to what we've been talking about, the lies. It's called How Do You Kill 11 Million People? By a fellow named Andy Andrews, who has written several other things. And it sounds like kind of a weird title, I know, but it's something that just kind of came to him, and he just wrote it all out. It does not use the term liberal. It does not use the term conservative. It does not use the term Republican, and it does not use the term Democrat. But he tells a story about human behavior and the people who try to manipulate it. And you know all the time you're reading it, he is discussing the life and times of Adolf Hitler, except for one thing. You're wrong. And you will see what I mean if you pick it up. You can get it on Amazon. How Do You Kill 11 Million People? The fundamental answer, I don't think I'm going to spoil this for anybody by telling you, is you lie to them. You lie over and over. But you don't lie little things. You tell the big lie, and you tell it over and over and over until people start to believe it. That is what happened then. That is what has happened in our recent past, and it's what's happening now. If Joe Biden tells you often enough that the Republicans will decimate your Social Security and your Medicare and your Medicaid, will you believe it? If he tells you once, probably not, but he tells you every day, sometimes several times. And apparently some people are starting to believe it because you read it in other places. And it's just fundamentally untrue. Everyone knows deep down inside that any politician who begins to mess with Social Security has a name. It's called an ex-politician. will be voted out if you are not thrown out first.
It does not matter what party you come from. If you allow the 30% reduction in Social Security that is scheduled to happen when it runs out of money, you will be kicked out of office. In the next election, if not sooner.
Yeah, exactly. Now there's another one. Oh, we got another phone call. Hang on. Good morning, Marshall.
Good morning.
What's happening?
You brought up one of my favorite books, Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're aware, but just about all the streaming services have the three movies that were created from that.
Mm-hmm.
It almost had to self-fund to get made,
right.
And they were actually pretty decent.
Yeah, I've seen them all, actually.
Well, I think for a lot of your listeners might not want to look at a book that's about an inch thick and say, I'm going to read that whole book.
It's long. Yeah, you're right. You can find them. They break it into book one, book two, and book three that are identical to the three phases in the book. And it is pretty easy to watch.
Y'all have a good week.
Oh, thanks so much. You want to take a shot at the trivia?
Not even a clue.
Fair enough.
Not even a clue.
Fair enough. We'll let somebody else have it. Thanks. Yeah, Marshall's right. It's a lot less time consuming. Now, they're not as good as a book, whatever is. You can maybe name a couple times that a movie is as good as a book.
Yeah.
Personally, I believe Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is one of those.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, what they're talking about now is they're saying that the Republicans want to add a 30% sales tax to everything you buy and abolish the IRS. Well, anybody who's been around the block as often as I have understands that what they're talking about is a concept called the fair tax. The fair tax started back in Texas in about 1978. It involved tens of millions of dollars of research and so on, and it finally came together in the 90s. It was kind of ready for presentation, ready for prime time, and now retired talk show host Neil Bortz and now retired congressman from Georgia, John Linder, were proponents of it, and they had several others. But they actually sat down and wrote the book called The Fair Tax Book. It also, as of this morning, is on Amazon and available for Kindle. It is not long. I have read it, I don't remember if it's three or four times. I read it one day, the first time, start to finish, and then the next day I picked it up and did the same thing. I even gave it to my mother, who was not exactly knowledgeable of all these things back then. She loved it. She thought it was great. It is so not what they are perpetrating on us right now. It's of the magnitude of the big lie. And if you start reading it, you'll understand exactly what I mean. It is the problem, the number one problem with the fair tax is the one they won't talk about, and that is that it would take all the power out of Congress for things, financial taxes and spend stuff. It would just defunds basically the apparatus that they use to get all that money.
Well, it gets rid of any reason to have an IRS in its current form.
Yeah, and you can argue that in so many different ways, but they won't argue that because that's the one they don't want you to know.
kind of reminds me of that little meme I sent you this week. It says,
yeah, this is good.
I found it on a libertarian website, but it says, my son asked me what taxes are, so I gave him a bag of M&Ms, and I explained to him that he has to give me some, and I know how much he has to give me, but he has to guess himself, and if he's wrong, he goes to prison. That's what taxes are.
Yeah, exactly. Well, everybody knows you have to fund the government. So when this thing was started, they looked at the various ways it could be done. And the concept of a consumption tax is hardly anything new because almost everybody has a sales tax, right? At least on some things. But they looked at it totally differently. And I'm just going to give you a little outline, and then I want everybody who is interested in this stuff to get the book and read it objectively. And then you can talk seriously about it. But we'll be touching on it a few more times in the near future just because it's in front of Congress again. But if you buy something today at the retail level, you're not only buying the thing, the good or the service that you take home with you, you are also buying the income tax that was paid by the people who made it. If it's a service provider, they pay taxes on the money they receive, and they pass that on to you. It's in the price. If you're buying a car, you're paying the taxes for the guy who made the tires, and the guy who made the engines, and the guy who made the paint and glass and everything in it. Every one of those has an embedded tax, meaning it was passed on from the people who did that to the next level, and it builds up. And by the time you get to the retail level with new goods and services, they found that the average amount of the price of something at retail, 22% of that amount is based on the people who paid the taxes. You paid to pay back their taxes. They collected them, basically. So the first thing that would happen is that nobody would pay taxes anymore, and prices would drop by 22% overnight. So yesterday it was $100, today it's $78. But then to fund the government, they add on the fare tax, which is not 30%, it's 23%. And what happens? The price went from 100 to 78 and was taxed back to 100. You're paying exactly the same today as you paid yesterday.
But
what's the difference?
The difference is you have more money to pay it.
100% of your paycheck is in your pocket. How in the world can they miss that little fact?
They want to miss it.
They want to miss it. Exactly right. So they are telling you that the Republicans want to add 30% to the price of what you buy, and that it's regressive and it hurts the little people most. And I'll spend a few minutes in each of the next few shows just explaining little details on it. But please, people, go out and pick up the book and read it and call us and tell us if you aren't just blown away by the whole thing. It is truly remarkable. All right. And in a good, after a good January, the average performance of the S&P for the rest of the year is 10.9% up. So Wednesday morning, get up and look at how January went. And it's no guarantee, but it's a long-term average. And maybe, maybe we're just going to have a real fine year. See you next week. This is the Vanley Financial Hour.